Hi, good afternoon. Well, thank you. That was a great segue into our talk, and I imagine we'll each build on the topic. My colleague, Leba Schallenberger, we were nodding our heads the entire time through your presentation because I think you shared many of the findings that we have found. And to know some of these things up front, if you're starting programs, is very helpful as opposed to learning them as you go. So these are great lessons to share, I think, and for all of us to learn from. So what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to show a little bit of data about some findings that we've had as we have launched a major initiative within ExxonMobil called the Culture of Health. And we have moved from information sharing about health and wellness into a more dynamic type of program. We are trying to change behaviors and create a culture within our community, which ExxonMobil and the workplace is in itself a community, and change behaviors there that support healthy activities. And we're going to talk a little about some of the incentive strategies and some of the learnings that we had about how do you engage the people and how do you engage people who most need these kind of programs. So at ExxonMobil, in the U.S., we have 35,000 employees, and we have built on what is a very strong safety culture in the oil and gas industry. And sort of the next phase of that is focusing on making sure that we do the most that we can as an employer to promote health in our employees. A healthy employee is a safe employee, and somebody who's as fit as they can be to do manual labor or any other type of labor for that matter is going to be safer than if they were not fit for their work. So this has started as a U.S.-wide program, initially a two-year pilot. Eventually, this is planned to be a global program, so we hope to have a lot more really interesting learnings from this. But for now, we're going to focus on some of the early findings that we've had in the U.S. We started with a two-year pilot. We tested in two types of locations that we have that are typical for ExxonMobil. One is a manufacturing environment, so we used a refinery in the Midwest, and the other is a large office complex, and we used one in the Southwest that had about 1,200 people. We figured we'd have different challenges at each type of location, and we have different employee demographics at the locations as well. The program that we wanted to initiate really has four components. One is biometric screening, so we're looking at their cholesterol, their blood pressure, their BMI, typical biometric screening, things that people can modify. So we're not doing PSA necessarily in this program, we're not doing mammograms necessarily in this program. We're really focusing on the things that individuals can directly impact based on their behaviors. We do online health assessments. And we added something new to some of our prior wellness initiatives, which is telephonic health coaching, and I'll talk a little more about that as we go on. And then we have worksite health promotion programs. So what do we think we know about the people who didn't participate? Because as you move on, you want to engage as many people as you can. Some of the typical barriers to introducing wellness programs in the business place is making the business case to have them. And a common comment will be, well, the healthy people are the only ones that do it, the joggers, the marathoners, they're going to do it. And if you're not going to capture the people who aren't already doing that, then what impact have you really made? So it's an important concept in the business world. We know that often the people who don't participate, at least prior studies have suggested, that they are less healthy than the people that are participating, and they're less ready to make changes. So this is a little bit of data, and I'm not a big data person, and so I won't spend a lot of time on this, but I did want to point out that we looked at our populations, so the refineries on the top, the campus office based on the bottom, and as is typical of the demographics, in the refinery we had a predominantly male population. In the office campus we had skewed a little bit more toward the female population. And what we found was that for health risk assessments, more of the females participated. And we also found that as you look at the age groups and you move along the spectrum of age, the older population, the employees that were over 50, tended to not be as engaged in these programs. And what we do know is that over time, if you do not actively work to create healthy behaviors, you will start on a trend that will increase your risk factors. So this is sort of another way of breaking down the data. Again, we looked at the four age groups, and what you can see is that in the younger age group, the number of people who had a high number of risk factors or were considered to have high risk factors were lower, so 9%. As you moved on and they were older, over age 50, it grew to 60%. So fairly, somewhat intuitive, pretty much what we would think, but we are a company of engineers, so we like to have numbers, and we like to show that what we think is really true because the numbers say it. So I think that that's part of what this does for us. Again, this shows that, and this is looking at all the population combined, so we didn't separate them by the age groups, and still it's a pretty remarkable number, I think, both in the refinery and the office location, where you might think you would have generally a healthier population, more white collar compared to the blue collar type population. But the fact is, we have a large number of employees who have a significant number of modifiable risk factors. And that's important. And it's good in a way, because those are risk factors that we can help people improve. And this is some numbers around the engagement level of the pilot as we moved forward with this. So we got about 33% of the employees to participate in the biometric screenings. They were on site, so it was convenient for the employees. We do have some challenges in the manufacturing environment where you have shift workers, but we did try to manage that by providing throughout all the different shifts. We had a fairly similar engagement on the health assessments. What you'll see is for the campus section, there were 41% participated, but in the refinery, 28%. That was a learning. As we went on, we found that some of the workers in the manufacturing environment, they didn't sit at a computer. They didn't have ready access to an online assessment. In fact, they didn't even have access to get online, even if they went to a company computer. So we had to do some workarounds for that. And then those are, again, some of the statistics about the coaching and the worksite programs. One of the significant learnings that we had with the worksite programs is in the first year, you can see in the refinery, we had less than 10% participation in the worksite findings. I think Leba will say one of the first programs they did, they had about three people show up. So it was a little bit distressing, and we had to go back and kind of think about this. And we had a very interesting finding, and I think it's similar to the first speaker's point, that we have very disciplined employees. They're hardworking. They have a large volume of work. And typically, they only do what their supervisor or upper management gives them permission to do. And the idea of going to do a health or wellness thing in the middle of the workday is somewhat of a new concept in our employee population. And it wasn't until we talked with management there, who fully supported doing all this. They really think this is a great idea. They can see the business case. But it wasn't until they started showing up at the events, and of course they're voluntary, we can't make them mandatory, and that does make this different from creating a safety culture. They're voluntary, but once they started showing up, the employees started showing up. They like their supervisors to see them at things that they perceive their supervisor thinks is important, and we had a dramatic improvement in engagement. This is a complex slide. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Basically, what it is telling us is that we had a certain number of people who took the biometric screening. So we have their numbers. We know what they are. But they did not go on to take the health risk assessment. And what we found was that at every category that we tested, those people had worse scores than the people who went on. So the people who had the highest cholesterols, the highest BMIs, the highest blood pressure did not go on to take the health risk appraisal for further engagement in the program. And that's a problem. So individuals who are least likely, they may have many reasons, and that's part of where we're at now, is trying to figure out why do these people not proceed on. Maybe they're already engaged in activity through the traditional medical system and they don't feel a need to do this. Maybe like the guy with the Help Me, he just doesn't know what to do. Maybe the person in the middle has tried a bajillion diets and has just kind of decided that nothing's going to work for him. And maybe, like the lady at the end, she just doesn't have time and she's going to do what it takes to get through the day. So, again, these are the four areas that we did. What I want to say about the lifestyle coaching is that it is geared to a very motivational interviewing, is the technique they call. And as opposed to when you go through perhaps to your doctor and they may say, oh, you know, your weight's up, need to lose weight, blood pressure's up, you know, maybe they'll give you some medication, but cholesterol's up, you need to watch your diet. And you kind of go home, and it's not digital enough for most people to know what they do to address it. What we intend to do is bridge that gap with this coaching. And it's a technique where you ask the person what they're ready to change. The coach knows what your numbers are, so they may say, see, your weight is whatever it is, and you know, have you tried anything ever to try to improve that? And it's very open-ended, but it keeps continuing to move the person to understanding the barriers that keep them from having very specific healthy behaviors. And then they come to an agreement on what the person will change. And it may be, I'm going to refrain from having dessert at every meal except one this week, and I'm going to try to exercise in some way three times this week. So it's very digital, and then there's follow-up calls where you talk about progress. This is an example of one of the programs. It was one of the first programs that was done at each of the pilot sites, and it was don't just set goals, achieve them. And again, it's the idea of creating a goal that is not so high and mighty and all-inclusive that it's almost difficult to achieve. It's very achievable goals, bite-sized goals, if you will, and that fit their lifestyle, keeps them motivated, gives them some social support for what they're doing, so they're seeing things throughout the day at the work site all day that's reminding them that these activities are going on. And they learn what to do if you relapse, if you forget or you aren't able to do something for a while. It's not an all or nothing. You get up and you start again, and that's a skill that people have to learn. 2 months later, after they set their goal, they came back and they went to a table that was one of these three tables. I achieved my goal, kind of did good but not great, or I really didn't make the progress that I'd hoped to make. And they self-identified and went there, and then at each table, the coach was there to talk about how you move from whichever of those steps that you are at, whichever of those areas that you are at, and move forward. And it was very popular, and I think it helped people to understand the whole concept of creating achievable goals. And then at the end of that session, they were to sign up for the next session. So each program at the worksite builds on the next program. We have a whole variety. At the end of the pilot, which we did for 2 years actually, we had a toolkit built of 2 years worth of worksite programs that we're now able to launch US-wide to all of our worksites, and we're in the process of doing that right now. But some of the significant factors, we do have monetary incentives for people, so they do get a small amount of money if they take the health risk appraisal in a certain time frame, if they do the biometric screening, and they get an additional amount of money if they finish their coaching sessions. And for some people, that's inspiring. For others, not. But we have many different types of incentives. So we really try to target our incentives to not just were you the best at whatever it was? If it was walking, did you walk the farthest? You get the prize. It's did you sign up at all? You get a prize. Are you a non-exerciser who's decided to try this? You get a different prize, perhaps, or a special prize. And we try to encourage teams. You got extra points if you did the activity as a team. You got extra points for your team if you pulled in somebody who was a non-exerciser. So we really have worked hard to bring in all groups of people and encourage people who don't normally do these activities to do them, but for people who do them to continue to do them. And that is it, and I think my time is just about up, so I will turn the mic over.